WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's Monday, May 15th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Title 42 expired on Thursday, and Americans were deeply concerned that whatever shoddy semblance of a border that still lingered would cease to exist completely. On Tuesday, just days before it was set to end, a record 11,000 migrants were caught trying to illegally cross into the United States. But it looks like the worst hasn't materialized. So far, while illegal border crossings continue at an unacceptably high rate, the surge actually slackened in many areas over the weekend, according to available information. Once again, though, that slight decrease is in context of a tremendously high rate of illegal migration. It seems the Biden administration is finally waking up to the fact that their political power will be in jeopardy if they don't stem the tide of illegal immigration before the 2024 elections. This is probably why Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas is suddenly talking tough on illegal immigration, and why the administration has rolled out new regulation that it's at least half-heartedly trying to enforce. The new provisions replacing Title 42 now require anyone seeking asylum in the U.S. to first apply in other countries they have passed through. It also includes penalties for illegal entry, such as the potential for a 5-year ban on visiting the U.S.
We began planning in 2021 for the end of Title 42.
The pandemic-era policy allowed the U.S. to turn migrants away, citing concerns over COVID-19. When it ends just before midnight, new rules will be put in place, making it harder to claim asylum. First, migrants will be required to have applied for and been denied asylum in another country before turning to the United States, as those deported are now subject to a 5-year ban from the U.S.
We removed, returned, and expelled 1.4 million people last year. Ask those 1.4 million people if they think the border is open.
Tough words, but Mallorca's record speaks for itself. The one thing they aren't doing is actually bringing the border under control. And House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said over the weekend that he's lost track of the informant who was the source for the investigation into alleged corruption centered around President Biden and his family. Comer appeared on Fox News' Sunday Morning Futures, where he said that at least 9 of the 10 whistleblowers with knowledge of the situation are either in court, in jail, or missing.
Are there whistleblowers or informants missing right now?
Well, with what we've investigated and the people that we've tracked down, going back to the CEFC, the two main players in that business, as well as all the Americans that were involved in the different Biden influence peddling schemes, as well as the Serbian national, the 9 of the 10 people that we've identified that have very good knowledge with respect to the Bidens, they're one of three things. Maria, they're either currently in court, they're currently in jail, or they're currently missing. So it's of the utmost importance that the FBI work with us to be able to try to identify what research they've done, what investigations they've done, because we have people that want to come forward, but honestly, Maria, they fear for their lives. Not only are the Biden lawyers and the Biden White House intimidating them, the media is trying to intimidate and discredit them.
And it appears there are people in the White House intimidating these whistleblowers.
This is absolutely extraordinary, and it is stunning that some people are missing, that you need to prove this. Who in the White House is intimidating these people? Do you know?
I do know. We're saving that for a later time. But I can tell you one thing that a lot of people don't know. When I issue a subpoena to a bank or to an individual, the second I issue that, Jamie Raskins gets that. And when we get information in from the bank or from any individual, they make two copies, one for the majority, which are the Republicans, one for the minority, which are the Democrats. And my biggest problem with the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee is they're acting as a criminal defense attorney for the Biden family.
However, another member of the House Oversight Committee seems to have contradicted Comer. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, in response to Comer's interview with Fox, tweeted yesterday afternoon, "Just to be clear, our whistleblower for Joe Biden is not missing." Interesting. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on this and report on it soon. And remember Trump derangement syndrome?
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
It looks like TDS is coming back, and it's likely to get worse the closer we get to Donald Trump winning the Republican nomination, and the more the left will be confronted with offensive thoughts and rational ideas. Last Wednesday, CNN hosted a Republican Party town hall with Trump. The event was moderated by Caitlin Collins, who appeared to have gone into the event with a game plan to challenge and discredit Trump. And bless her heart, she tried. She brought up the lawsuit with the writer who accused Trump of rape. She challenged his insistence that the 2020 election was stolen. She tried to make it look like Trump encouraged the J6 violence, and she even tried to trap him into appearing like a Russia sympathizer. Here is Trump refusing to take a side on the Russia-Ukraine debacle.
Can you say if you want Ukraine or Russia to win this war?
I want everybody to stop dying. They're dying, Russians and Ukrainians. I want them to stop dying. And I'll have that done. I'll have that done in 24 hours. I'll have it done. You need the power of the presidency to do it.
That sums up the kind of night it was for CNN. The Babylon Bee put it this way. CNN host sues Trump for assault and defamation after town hall. CNN, already a ship that's been bailing out water for the last couple of years, was skewered for giving Trump a platform. A headline from The Guardian declared that CNN's Trump debacle suggests TV media set to repeat mistakes of 2016. Here's Never Trumper Rick Wilson exhibiting TDS.
Chris Licht, you should be ashamed of yourself. This is astoundingly bad for the brand of CNN. It's astoundingly bad for the country. And it's astoundingly bad, honestly, folks, for every other Republican candidate in the primaries. Wrap that up. It's done. You saw this tonight. You know you can't beat him on the stage. Everybody else, oars up. Time to go to work because he's going to be the nominee.
Mainstay CNN reporter Anderson Cooper tried to do some damage control after the event. He explained to CNN 7 viewers why they invited Trump onto the network in the first place.
Now, many of you think CNN shouldn't have given him any platform to speak, and I understand the anger about that, giving him the audience, the time, I get that. But this is what I also get. The man you were so disturbed to see and hear from last night, that man is the front runner for the Republican nomination for president. And according to polling, no other Republican is even close. That man you were so upset to hear from last night, he may be president of the United States in less than 2 years. And that audience that upset you, that's a sampling of about half the country. They are your family members, your neighbors, and they are voting. And many said they're voting for him. Now, maybe you haven't been paying attention to him since he left office. Maybe you've been enjoying not hearing from him, thinking it can't happen again. Some investigation is going to stop him. Well, it hasn't so far. So if last night showed anything, it showed it can happen again. It is happening again. He hasn't changed, and he is running hard. You have every right to be outraged today and angry and never watch this network again. But do you think staying in your silo and only listening to people you agree with is going to make that person go away?
On Friday, The Spectator published a feature by Scottish-American historian Niall Ferguson titled Trump's Second Act, He Can Still Win in Spite of Everything. Ferguson's premise is that the poor economy is going to sink Biden. He wrote, quote, "What this suggests to me is that Joe Biden is in serious danger of following Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, and George H.W. Bush into the bin marked one-term presidents. Why? For the simple reason that no president since Calvin Coolidge a century ago has secured a re-election if a recession has occurred in the 2 years before the nation votes. It does not need to be as severe as the Great Depression that destroyed Herbert Hoover's presidency. A plain vanilla recession will suffice." End quote. Join me to discuss today's stories is senior editor for The New American, Rebecca Terrell. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good. So,
Right. The derangement begins.
Yes.
So it begins. And, you know, it's not surprising what you just said about the historical precedent, no president winning re-election after a recession. You have to remember, too, since 1913, our entire economy has been controlled by a private banking cartel that can really dictate what the economy does all by itself. So there's orchestration going on behind this. We always have to remember that. And the fact CNN is hosting Trump. You just always want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's going on behind the scenes. That's what's so great about JBS and the New American, right? Because that's what we report.
Yeah. I mean, that's our bread and butter. It's nice to see so many others coming around. And, you know, we've discussed the alternative media sources that are coming up, and they're kind of reporting along the same lines that we have. They're getting it. They're understanding there is that. You know, one thing that is interesting and that I don't want us to ever lose track of is Trump, I mean, he should win, and he most likely will, like he probably did in 2020. But what's not being taken into consideration, of course, is the cheating and the rigging, which it becomes, as time goes, continues on, it just becomes more undeniable.
Right. We know that 2020 wasn't the first stolen election, though. The good thing about it being stolen is that it did wake so many people up because it was kind of so obvious. You know, I say that the naysayers would say, oh, you have no proof, and that's just spreading misinformation. But come on, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand what went on with that. So I don't know. It's just going to be very interesting to see, because they're actually putting Biden back up as a contender, knowing that he can't really win. So
yeah.
Then again, it seems like a replay of 2020, right?
Right. So what do you make of this border issue here? I know we're very skeptical of the information we're getting in the first place, but based on that information, it seems that surge, that even surge on top of the surge, hasn't happened yet.
Right. Well, you see, you know, you hear the bleeding heart saying, oh, well, that's what America's all about. It's supposed to give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. These are not huddled masses yearning to be free. These are huddled masses yearning to take over our country and our culture. Always in the past, immigrants wanted to assimilate themselves into the American culture and become productive citizens of the United States and become citizens. These, you see, they're bringing flags from their home countries and waving them here and bringing the culture and bringing they want to take advantage of our welfare system. They're not wanting to become profitable, productive citizens. So the Title 42 was kind of a crutch, you know, using COVID as an excuse. We need to secure our borders at all times, not just during the time of a pandemic. And in order to preserve our culture, to preserve the Christian culture upon which our country was founded.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned a word that you're not allowed to say today, and we're going to keep saying, and that is assimilate. You know, they act like this is the worst possible thing that we can ask of people who are coming from systems and cultures who are not functioning like they are here. There is a reason this culture, this system functions better than, or has functioned better than any other in the world. There's a reason that for 200 years, people like my family came here and we said, we're going to assimilate. We're not going to make people be Romanians. We're going to be Americans. And it's so crazy that now they want to have this weird culture with all these mini cultures inside of it, because it doesn't work. It's never worked, right?
Right. It doesn't work. But also, you have to remember, too, there's this mentality of, I don't know, it's here now, so it's mine. I get to change it however I want to. And there's not a Christian ethic behind a lot of these cultures that are coming in. I watched some video from, I think it was Rebel News, that they were actually asking people, where are you coming from? And it's not just Mexico and South American countries, it's India and all sorts of African countries. And again, this is seeing, we're seeing our country, the demise of our country. And yes, we certainly do need a good president to protect our borders, but we also need to focus on Congress, because Congress is the key to getting to solving this border problem. We need to make sure that our congressmen are in there passing laws and restraining, you know, putting up walls that yeah. are even stronger than any wall that Trump planned.
Yeah, and this was the biggest issue, some argue, pundits and commentators, that this was the biggest issue that elevated Trump, was because after all these years, you have mentioned Republicans, the idea was that Republicans have failed. They were supposed to represent those of us who want strong borders, who want to keep our nation sovereign and our culture intact, and they haven't done a very good job. And does it seem like they're changing, or does it seem kind of like they're going to continue not to do a very good job?
Right. Well, we have to remember the very first Republican president was Abraham Lincoln, and he didn't take favorably to various states wanting to back out of the Union and form their own Confederacy. So there might be a little bit of an analogy there.
Yeah, you think so? You got any thoughts on the Comer deal? That seems a little odd there. Comer's like, we lost the whistleblower. You think there's something else at play there? You think there's some sort of scheme?
I mean, you have to remember, Comer's a politician too, and he's going to try to get as much mileage out of this as he possibly can. You know, he's becoming a bit of an American hero, exposing all of the treachery of the Biden family. So, it seemed a little bit kind of silly, especially when MTG came behind him and said, "No, nobody's missing. We've got who we need." So, I don't know. Maybe he's playing it up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I was totally, you know, like I said, we saw that story and like, well, that seems kind of important to report, but it doesn't seem as consistent, because we've been reporting, we've been staying on top of that. You know, whenever they come out with a new revelation, it's like, here's what it is. So we'll definitely keep an eye out on that. Rebecca, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but the New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son Noah did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board, and I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack, and because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
Welcome back. A new documentary called Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare, premieres this month. It's an expose about the twisted partnership between Big Brother, Big Pharma, and the American healthcare system. It's a scheme that became evident during what many call the COVID pandemic. Here's the trailer.
Thank you.
The movie is dedicated to Grace Emily Scherer and millions of lives that have been lost at the hands of evil. Grace was a teen with Down syndrome who died in 2021 at a hospital in Wisconsin. Her family is suing the hospital, maintaining that she was deliberately murdered by staff in order to take advantage of COVID incentive payments from the government. The documentary features her parents, Scott and Cindy Scherer, and big sister Jessica van der Heijden, who tell their heartbreaking story and details of their lawsuit. Other victims of hospital protocols appear alongside the Scherers. Participating will be Wendy and Robert Pazer, who relate how Scott Scherer helped rescue Robert from what they all believe would have been certain death had he remained in a COVID hospital last year. Erin Olszewski also recounts her experience as a nurse in New York in 2020. She's an RN and Army veteran turned whistleblower who exposed hospital protocols that she says were killing COVID patients. She lost her job for her clandestine work and is now the author of the book Undercover Epicenter Nurse. Here's some of her body cam footage that helps tell the story.
The guy over in 29, I had him upstairs because I was on CCU before it.
Yeah.
And he came in with a stroke.
I know, that's what 26-1 was, a stroke.
And no COVID, and now he's got COVID, and he's on a vent.
Well, because we gave it to him here.
Pediatrician Dr. Renata Moon and Holocaust survivor Vera Sheriff are also featured in this documentary, which is produced, edited, and directed by Jeff Wagner, host of the Patriot Review on Mike Lindell's Frank Speech TV. Along with the May 22 online premiere, there will be an in-person showing in De Pere, Wisconsin on Sunday, May 21st. You can get more information at the website americafirstproductions.com. Rebecca, I know that you have been following this story from the very beginning. I don't know what word to use. Interesting. It's nice. I guess it's good to see some sort of silver lining developing out of this, and hopefully this continues to bring attention to what seems to have happened during that.
Right. Well, when the sheriffs lost their daughter, Grace, they wanted to make sure that her death would not be in vain. They wanted to save others from the same fate. And I think that this documentary is one of those things that they're participating in to help bring that about. It's an interesting case that they filed because there aren't really any other court cases or very, very few that have made it to court over hospital victims of COVID protocols. And it's also important because, you know, you might say, okay, well, Joe Biden already said the pandemic was over. The public health emergency ended last Thursday, May 11th.
Yeah.
And so all of that is over. No, it's not, because the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in their rule that established these incentive payments for hospitals, it says that their incentive system will continue through the fiscal year in which the public health emergency ends. So we've got this going on. Nobody's talking about this, but it's going to still be going on through the end of December. They get one of the incentives, this is just one, is that they get a hospital will get a 20% bonus on the overall bill. And you know how high those are, those charge master prices that are made up out of thin air, just to get, you know, just to milk the insurance for as much as they possibly can. They get a 20% bonus payment for a COVID patient, regardless of whether the patient recovers or not. Now, actually, if a patient recovers, they're worth less to the hospital than they are if they die, because they get a payment for a COVID death.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and you have all these incentive payments for, and we know that the standard protocols, remdesivir, which even the World Health Organization now, since 2020, has said, we do not recommend remdesivir. Anthony Fauci, when he approved it for you, when he gave it the thumbs up and got approval from FDA for emergency use, he knew that there was a more than 50% mortality rate from remdesivir in the clinical trials, but he ignored that and approved it. He knows too, we all know, ventilators have a very high mortality rate. Once you go on a vent, that's almost like a death sentence.
Yeah.
So all of these things are talked about in the documentary. The Scherer's lawsuit has five charges. One is wrongful death, one is medical negligence, but one that's very interesting is medical battery. because the doctor unilaterally imposed a DNR order that the healthcare staffers
did not resuscitate.
Yes, do not resuscitate. There's also a declaration of judgment, which is really the thing in this lawsuit that could go on for a long time, because they're asking the courts to say, the hospital supposedly says, oh, the doctor has a right to issue a unilateral DNR when you have a when you have an ICU patient like this. That's not, I don't see how that's true. Of course, I don't practice, and I never practiced in Wisconsin. I used to practice as a nurse. I have an inactive license now. I don't practice anymore, obviously, but never heard of that before. And so the court will be able to declare a judgment on things like this about, no, DNR can't be unilaterally imposed, and it can be very easily expunged by the caregiver saying no.
Yes. But the her family... the girl's family wasn't even consulted, right, on the DNR, and that's part of what's right. at stake here, right?
Or at that's least. Part of it. That's part of it. So yeah, it's huge story. I'd encourage everybody to see. We're going to be watching the documentary and reviewing it at the New American. So I'd encourage everybody to follow that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you for your continuing reporting on this. And like you said, we're going to continue to watch it. And it'd be good if this really sets a precedent. And we start to uncover on a wide scale what all happened. Because like you said, just because those emergencies are over and whatnot, there's no way we should just go away from this. We need to find out what happened during those 2-3 years. And we need to take a lesson from that and make sure that going forward, generations will not have to be subjected to what we dealt with. That's the least we can do. Well, that's all for our news segment today, folks. For more Truth Behind the News, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com, or you can call our office at 800-727-8783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. That is 800-727-8783. And stay tuned, because after this, we'll be showing a recent interview TNA's editor-in-chief conducted with investigative journalist William F. Jasper, who discusses how out of control the intelligence community is. And then we'll cap off the show with another episode of Gary and Steve discussing principles. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for the New American Magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American Magazine represents an alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country is in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American Magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
Most Americans today are aware that there is a deep state, that there exists an unelected, invisible government behind the elected, visible government of the United States. But how many are aware of how extensive that deep state is, how deep it is, and the great control that it exercises over the policies of the United States of America, particularly in the intelligence agencies? Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit. And today we have with us William F. Jasper, who is senior editor of the New American Magazine. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gary. Pleasure being back.
Well, thank you for coming back. And it's always a delight. And of course, what we want to talk to you about today is the extensive cover story package that you did for the May 29 issue of the New American Magazine. And the reason I say extensive, Bill, is because you did three major articles in that issue having to do with the intelligence community. The first one is entitled Intel's Real Target, America. But before we delve into that, I want to refer first to one of the other articles you did having to do with deep states embedded Reds. And the subtitle says that since its founding is the OSS, that the CFR leaders, that refers to the Council on Foreign Relations, have recruited and promoted known communist agents and have protected them from investigation and prosecution. And of course, the article provides information showing that the CIA, which ostensibly is supposed to protect ourselves from foreign adversaries, such as the communists, in fact, is embedded with communists. Now, Bill, I want to ask you about something specifically that is not in your article, so we're going to go beyond the cover here, so to speak. But earlier this week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's running for president of the United States as a Democrat, was interviewed by the Gateway Pundit. And in that interview, he talked about the assassination of his uncle, President John F. Kennedy. And regarding that, he referred to Lee Harvey Oswald as being an asset of the CIA. He also said he was not a defector to communism. Well, he didn't say that explicitly. What he said was he was a fake defector. And that that defection or that supposed defection was arranged by James Angleton. So what are your thoughts regarding that, Bill? And specifically, is it possible to be an asset of the CIA and to be a genuine communist at the same time?
A couple of very important questions. And you're right. Even though you allowed me to hog a lot of real estate in this particular issue with my three articles, my apologies and thank you for being so generous there. This is a big topic, and there was so much that I couldn't get into that we're saving for future issues online and in print. But I didn't get into a number of important things, including Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, John F. Kennedy's assassination. And I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's running for president, as you pointed out, his assertion, which a number of other people have made in the past, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a CIA fake defector to the Soviet Union. I think, in my mind, the evidence, the jury is still out on that. We saw in the 1980s and 90s a number of meetings between leaders of the KGB and the CIA working together on intelligence operations. And so we've seen this commingling of agencies, which makes everything even murkier than it usually is in the wilderness of mirrors that we call the intelligence operations. So we'll probably have a follow-up story on that because we're still sorting through a lot of claims and counterclaims and evidence on that. But your second question about communists in the CIA, as I point out in my article, going clear back to the progenitor of the CIA, which was the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, that was formed in 1942 during the Second World War, really under the auspices and guidance of British intelligence, MI6. So the man in charge of OSS was General Wild Bill Donovan. And General Donovan was an early member of the Council on Foreign Relations. By the time the OSS was formed, he had already been a Council on Foreign Relations globalist for close to 20 years. And he had a love affair with communism and specifically with Stalinism and the NKVD. The NKVD was the progenitor of the KGB. And he actually went to the NKVD and said, hey, could you help us with some of your intelligence people? And he put some of their intelligence people into the OSS, including his top assistant, Duncan Lee, who was, it's been confirmed, he was not only a communist, but an NKVD agent. And so I go in this very brief article into a number of the other people who were identified in the OSS, and who then transitioned into the CIA, who were NKVD, KGB operatives for the Soviet Union. In other words, they were working inside our intelligence agencies for the intelligence agencies of the Soviet Union. And General Donovan was fine with that. And so have been most of his successors in the CIA, almost all of whom, as we show in our articles, have also been globalists, members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then that leads us to the major premise of our stories and what we have been reporting on for decades, that at the top levels, the globalists and the communists are working together and have been for decades to destroy limited constitutional government and create a new world order of totalitarian globalist control. And that's why what we see in the Council on Foreign Relations, at the World Economic Forum, at the Trilateral Commission, et cetera, all these globalist institutions working very closely with the communists and their intelligence agencies, which are controlled by civilian appointees, which the globalists have put in charge, have been using those agencies against us. Even though we think they're our sword and shield, they are actually turning out to be very destructive of our freedom.
Now, you said earlier, Bill, that the verdict is still out as to whether Lee Harvey Oswald might have been an asset of the CIA. And I agree with you that the verdict is still out. But one of the reasons why the verdict is still out, of course, is because there are still all kinds of documents that have not been released by the U.S. government. And yet we're almost 60 years removed from the assassination of JFK. Why on earth would these documents still be under lock and key? Unless, of course, the deep state has something to hide.
Yes, so the Official Secrets Act is very much like Britain's Official Secrets Act, and that is really to keep from the people whom the government is supposed to be serving the truth about what they've been doing to us, not for us. And so there is really no national security interest, legitimate national security interest, served by keeping these things locked up. And that is why Congress needs to, and hopefully in this weaponization of government that the House committee is holding hearings on, ultimately it would be wonderful if they would actually then have legislation which would set new standards for releasing classified information like this. It would have to meet a higher standard in order to protect national security. Obviously, we don't want to give away our military secrets, our secret weapons secrets to the enemy. But if they're hiding malfeasance and treason in government, which I am quite certain is the case, then that has to be opened up to the sunlight of public inspection.
And there are certainly examples of that where we know for sure that the CIA in the intelligence community has been working against the interests of the United States, such as, for example, spying on the American people.
Absolutely. We even had a number of cases of course, top intelligence officials, James Clapper, John Brennan, James Comey, lying, committing perjury, and being caught at it, committing perjury in Senate hearings under oath, and claiming that, no, we're not spying on the American people. No, we do not tap, or we do not record any of the phone conversations or whatnot. We know that is false, and it's been now even the mainstream media admits that it's false, but there's no crusade to have them brought to justice.
They're given,
as we point out, they're actually given contracts in the media to be commentators.
Right. And of course, how can that be unless the fix is in at the top?
Right.
And the name of your, go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, it's important. We need to make this distinction here. We're being very critical of the IC, the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we fully acknowledge the vast majority of people who are special agents of the FBI, who work for the NSA or who work for the CIA, are loyal Americans who think they're defending America. In fact, I've interviewed and have been friends with many FBI, NSA, CIA people over the years, and many of them have been very alarmed by what they see inside their own agencies, the direction that these are going. They recognize that there is inherently, when you create an intelligence agency, there is the danger that it can be brought back against you, against the people it's supposed to serve. And so they would like to see more safeguards, more guardrails put in place against that for those agencies which are legitimate. And then that's a whole separate argument about which one should even exist and at what level and at what kind of funding. So,
right. Well, I think you made a really great point, Bill, that there are many wonderful and patriotic Americans within the intelligence community. But the deep state is also very entrenched with that within that community. And of course, they have a lot of clout because they're really the ones who are calling the shots. And your main cover story article, the first of the three, the title of that article is Intel's Real Target, America. And it's really hard to argue with that. I mean, I think that's absolutely true, the title of your article, just looking at the evidence that you assembled within that article. And of course, the evidence that you assembled is just a small part of the total evidence that's available.
Yeah, so we could only hit a very small wedge of the whole pie. And we focused in that first article on more contemporary things that people would have more freshly in their memories, particularly with the way in which the intelligence community at large, and particularly at the top, was used to try to attempt a coup against President Donald Trump. And they did this repeatedly, leaking almost every day to their adjuncts at the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN, damaging information or ill-timed information, which was an attempt to throw the new administration of Donald Trump off, to hamstring him, to cripple his administration. And with false stories or semi-false stories or even true stories that are taken out of context or released in an untimely manner. And so, in other words, you had a war going on within by people who are supposed to be supporting the president and the new administration, and they were working inside to undermine him, and to actually, they're continuing that now. They're trying to put him in prison, trying to keep and send a signal to all other Americans that, look, if someone is important, as powerful, as wealthy, and as connected as Donald Trump can be taken down, you can be too, so better not mess with us.
What is your recommendation to our viewers, Bill, is what people can do about this?
Well, first of all, of course, before taking any action, and we have to take action, we have to become informed. And that's what we try to do at The New American. That's what this particular issue of The New American is about, how the intelligence agencies fit into this. And this is crucially important for people to get a handle on. And then once they're informed, then they have to join with others in taking appropriate action. And that's what we try to do in giving direction in that area as well.
Well, thank you, Bill. And of course, for becoming informed, we encourage everybody to read your cover story articles in the May 29 issue of the New American Magazine.
They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot, it's too cold. You know what? The weather changes.
Here's the news, Dad.
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days.
Ditch the fake news and always get the truth. Go to thenewamerican.com.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
Who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand when necessary.
This is Gary Benoit, and today I'm with Steve Bonta, the executive senior editor for the New American Magazine. Steve, welcome once again for another episode to look at fundamental principles.
Hi, Gary. Good to be here.
Well, great. Now, today's principle is the fact that the most important function of government is to protect God-given unalienable rights.
Yes, and that's, of course, in those familiar words in the Declaration of Independence, isn't it?
Right.
That to secure those rights, governments were instituted among men, right? To,
yep.
to secure means to protect. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? I mean, that sort of runs counter to a lot of people's intuition, because we look at government, we see that it has this kind of coercive dimension, and then we think, well, the purpose of government is to punish people, mm-hmm. or the purpose of government is to maintain order. You know, or this type of thing. The purpose of government is to compel obedience to the laws, or however you want to put it. And, you know, to some extent, all of those things are emergent characteristics of government. Even good government, you know,
right.
has to have the ability to coerce.
It has to have an element of
force. Because there are always certain refractory souls mm-hmm. who are here, I think, almost irredeemably criminal mm-hmm. that understand nothing but force. And so, I mean, that's an unfortunate fact about human nature. But leaving that aside, I think, you know, John Locke and Thomas Jefferson and all the other major theoreticians that laid the groundwork for what became, you know, this wonderful, you know, American... It's called an experiment. I kind of hate that term too, but this wonderful American Republic and its founding saw government at essence and in the first instance as the way to protect God-given rights,
mm-hmm.
which begs the question, why do they need protecting? Well, this is sort of, look at the world around you and imagine with Locke, okay, a time... when we didn't have all this modern technology and all this modern connectedness and everything, and people lived more or less atomistically, at least this is sort of thought experiment mm-hmm. that Locke proposed, you know, in very small units, in, you know, family units or individually or whatever. And under such circumstances, they're very vulnerable to predation from other humans, obviously wild animals as well, but also, you know, the elements, all the rest mm-hmm. of this. Not that that's quite as important when we're talking about rights, but... certain fundamental rights include the right of life and the right to develop property.
Sure. Well, three of them were listed in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, interestingly, you know, the right to property, so styled, is not mentioned in those words.
Not specifically, right.
You know, I mean, Locke says, you know, life, liberty, property, these are man,
right.
or something like that.
But the Declaration says among these rights, so it
right.
wasn't intended to be a complete list, but I wonder if you could see property as far... falling under the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah, sure. Well, so let's take an example. So mm-hmm. so caveman Gary, mm-hmm. who lives all by himself, he has no modern technology, tens of thousands of years ago or 6,000 years ago, whatever, okay. You know, he's living out in the middle of nowhere, nothing but glaciers and woolly mammoths running around, and builds his own shelter, and he works really hard, and he... You know, and because of his work, he lays up a lot of meat for the wintertime. He grows crops. He's in good shape. He has a nice, snug dwelling that he's expended a lot of energy in building. And Locke would say that as a result of his choices and his labor, those things are his by right.
Right.
Meanwhile, caveman Steve, who's lazy, shiftless, and basically inclined to criminal behavior,
yeah, obviously
comes along.
Steve.
Yeah. No. This is it. Comes along, and because the one thing he has that Gary doesn't have is a really, really big club. Mm-hmm. And so he comes along, he clubs Gary, takes his stuff, and it's over. Okay. So so what does Gary do? He didn't kill Gary, he just knocked him out. So okay, when Gary comes to, he says, I'm not going to let that happen again. So he goes out and he finds a bunch of people in the next valley, and they get together and they say, look, you know, this caveman Steve and the gang of hoodlums that he's with, we can't allow him to continue to take our stuff because, well, we're going to starve. So they agree to create a government whose fundamental purpose is protection.
Right.
I mean, security. I mean, we kind of, the word security now, when you think of, we think of, oh, you know, government's always promising security, and that's a bad thing. But in a sense, you know, we do all want security in the good sense. We want to be able to know that we can pursue the most worthwhile things in life, whether they be hobbies and interests, whether they mm-hmm. be our families and our communities, our churches, all these things, without fear of being killed and terrorized, you know, like the monks at Lindisfarne when the Vikings came to call, this sort of thing. We want to think that we don't have that. We don't need to worry about that. So government then becomes a solution for that. So Gary and his friends set up a big society, and the next time Caveman Steve comes along with his friends, they fight them off, and that's the end of the problem. Okay, but in course of time, you know, Gary discovers, you know, he's got like 50 people together and they have this nice community, and there's a couple people in the community who are real bad eggs and they're causing problems for everyone else. So it turns out that then government becomes a mechanism to restrain criminality from within as well as depredation from without. So that's what we mean when we say protecting rights. Now, in exchange for that, Gary and his friends say, well, you know, if we're going to hire a few people to be leaders, if we're going to elect them as leaders or appoint them as policemen or soldiers or sheriffs or whatever, you know, it's reasonable. We'll all pool together, give them some compensation for that. But the assumption will be then that they will have the resources to do what they need to do. And if at any point they get out of line, we will end their tenure and appoint somebody else. You know, so Gary and his friends remain in charge of the government that they've created. But that government becomes a blessing because then that means now Gary doesn't have to worry about fighting all the time. He's appointed somebody else.
Well, they can't forget about the government either, because if you do, it could very quickly
become
a nightmare rather than a blessing.
Sure, it's a very delicate thing, you know. But now, but now Gary knows if he has a dispute with his neighbor over where the boundary between their property is, well, they can appeal to a third party, the government, to come in and adjudicate the dispute. So all these things, in theory at least, will accrue as unalloyed social blessings as a result of good government. All right, and all of them, all these things really are sort of what we would call negative powers. In other words, the power to safeguard rights, not the positive power to say, okay, Gary, you know what? You're making too much money compared to these other people. So we're going to take some of your money and property from you and give it to somebody else so that we have this mythical thing called equality, right? At that point, government is no longer protecting Gary's rights, it's actually violating Gary's rights in the name of this chimera, you know, which is social justice. We use this term, right? So, and that's very different from justice, by the way, without the social in front of it. Social justice is a perversion of the idea of government because it says that it's not just the purpose of government to safeguard individual rights, but to engineer society as well. To look at society and say, well, it's just monumentally unfair that this guy has more property than that guy, or that, you know, even though inequality is the lot of human beings. When we say men are created equal, we mean in the eyes of God, but we're certainly not equal in any other way, right? We have different talents, different physical, mental, and other gifts, right? And it's that diversity of talents, that inequality that obtains, that allows us to have a society in the first place. Thank goodness not everyone is like me or like you. We'd never get highways built or all the practical, you know, everybody would be sitting around talking about political principles all the time. And while that's an enlightening thing to do, it doesn't get, you know, the bridges built and the crops harvested. So people have different talents and properly applied. This is a good thing. But when people start thinking along these lines of social justice, they, as Bastiat long ago observed, they turn government into an institution of plunder, or spoliation, as he put it in French, right?
Or legalized plunder.
Legalized plunder, right. So we pervert the law, right. And by so doing, we pervert the entire purpose of government and lose sight of this really very simple, pristine fact that while government may occasionally be justified in doing other things, you know, maybe, you know, building a bridge or authorizing building a bridge across the commons or something like that, you know, certainly there are other purposes to government that are contemplated in the Constitution's preamble that we may get to at some point. But that originary purpose is a negative function of safeguarding individual rights and liberty. The idea being that to maximize societal benefit, to truly promote social justice, all you need to do is maximize individual liberty. And by so doing, you maximize individual potential. And that redounds to everybody's benefit, because now that means that Gary and Steve and anyone else who's not irredeemably criminal, right, can make choices according to their own judgment, their own talents, can develop their God-given talents for the betterment not just of themselves and their family, but society as a whole. And that's why the United States, whose government in its original form probably most closely approximated this ideal, correspondingly became the most successful state in American history and remains so.
Well, Americans could fulfill their dreams. They could pursue happiness, and they could apply their ingenuity and do all kinds of things that brought about all the material wealth that we've had because the Constitution and the form of government we had kept bureaucrats out of the way and kept criminals out of the way. And kept foreign powers, foreign adversaries out of the way, so that all this energy could be focused on pursuing one's dreams.
Right, and you're seeing that this formula is now being applied in other parts of the world, places like, you know, Taiwan and Switzerland and Japan and many other countries that have just blossomed as a result of instituting this principle that government should be primarily about protecting individual rights.
Right. Well, thank you, Steve.
Well, that's all for our show today. Thank you for joining us once again. And please come back and watch tomorrow. And for more Truth Behind the News, make sure you go to thenewamerican.com, where we have new stories every day. And we keep you up to date on everything that's going on. That's thenewamerican.com. Have a good day.